From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now, and we're waiting for a statement from President Obama about Syria any minute now. In a statement in the last hour, Secretary of State John Kerry directly blamed the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad for a chemical weapons attack last week that killed at least 1,429 civilians, including 426 children. Kerry detailed the intelligence that he said proves the regime's involvement, acknowledging the false intelligence that led the U.S. into war in Iraq 10 years ago.
Our intelligence community has carefully reviewed and re-reviewed information regarding this attack. And I will tell you, it has done so more than mindful of the Iraq experience. We will not repeat that moment.
Kerry then spoke about the consequences.
So the primary question is really no longer, what do we know? The question is, what are we collectively, what are we in the world going to do about it? As previous storms in history have gathered, when unspeakable crimes were within our power to stop them, we have been warned against the temptations of looking the other way. History is full of leaders who have warned against inaction, indifference, and especially against silence when it mattered most. Our choices then in history had great consequences, and our choice today has great consequences.
Well, as we wait for the president to speak, let's bring in Democrat Elliot Engel, ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, what do you make of what we heard today from Secretary of State Kerry?
Well, what Secretary Kerry said today was essentially what he said on the conference call last night to chairs and ranking members of relevant committees, that they have no doubt that gas was used against the Syrian civilian population, and no doubt that it was the Assad regime who used it.
And do you agree with him on that? Do you have no doubt about those things?
Well, I don't have any doubt about it, because if indeed the Syrian regime was being unfairly accused, they would have welcomed international inspectors into Syria as quickly as possible. What they did was they kept international inspectors out of Syria for 5 days. You don't do that if you're not culpable. You keep inspectors out because you have something to cover up or to hide, and there's indication that during those 5 days there was some cover-up. So that didn't really surprise me. We were informed that there were interceptions of communications between high-level officials of the Syrian government, and that movements of Syrian officials in and around the Damascus suburbs were consistent with the gas attacks that happened later that day. So we were told that U.S. intelligence is very positive that the attacks were carried out and that the attacks were from the Assad regime.
Congressman, if the U.S. is going to act and strike, perhaps with cruise missiles at targets in Syria, what is the goal? What is the end goal of that?
Well, I think, as the president said, the goal would show that we are not going to stand idly by and allow a civilian population to be murdered by its own people. That's a war crime, and if we were just to let it happen, we would have every despot in the world thinking that they can get away with it. We'd have every terrorist group in the world, and Hezbollah is already an ally of the Assad regime, thinking that they can get away with it. So, as the president said, if we can impede their ability to do it again or make them understand that there's a price to pay, we'll be that much ahead.
So it would just be to send a message, you're saying?
Well, I think initially to send a message, and we can then monitor the Syrian regime's behavior and decide what we want to do about it. I don't think there's much of a stomach to get to the United States involved in the civil war in Syria. I think right now the important thing is to let the Syrian regime understand that their use of chemical weapons against their own people is unacceptable and won't be tolerated by the United States or the civilized world.
There are also the risks of action, of course. People have talked about them. What, in your view, are the biggest risks of acting and getting involved here?
Well, you know, there are also, as Secretary Hagel said yesterday in the conference, there's not only risks of action, there's risks of inaction. I think that there are many, many bad choices left in Syria today. There are no good choices, only bad choices. But I think of all the bad choices, the worst choice is to do nothing. The worst choice is to let Assad gas his own people and send a message again to every dictator and despot and terrorist group around the world that they can get away with this. So I think it's worse at this point to do nothing than it is to do something. Now, you can always have a scenario whereby if we do something, there'll be retaliation or we'll be sucked into something wider. And I think that's the general fear of some people. And I think it's a genuine fear. I happen not to agree with it, but I think it's a genuine fear. People are weary of two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and people don't want to go down that path again. But I think the president has been very, very clear that he is not in favor, nor will he countenance boots on the ground in Syria. And I think he's going to be very careful to have a targeted attack and send a very, very clear message. You know, I liken to what's happening in Syria today to 1999 in Kosovo. And in 1999 in Kosovo, we had a beleaguered population being attacked and murdered by its own government, similar to what we have in Syria today. And at that point, there were NATO airstrikes, which changed the whole equation in Kosovo. I believe we could do the same in Syria today, but there is no stomach for that.
Elliot Engel is the ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So a voice there for some sort of reaction to the chemical attacks in Syria, saying the worst choice would be to do nothing and would send the message to every other despot that chemical attacks are okay. Well, let's now bring in some voices that may disagree. We already know that one does. Bob Scales is a retired Army Major General. He's former Commandant of the U.S. Army War College. He joins us again from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. He's been helping us today take a look at these voices coming out of Washington with the U.S. plan. And we also want to welcome Chris Harmer, senior naval analyst at the Institute for the Study of War. He studied the Syrian military and was part of the planning for cruise missile strikes in the first Persian Gulf War. Welcome to you, Chris.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
And welcome back, Major General Scales.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
And did I characterize you correctly that we have heard Secretary of State John Kerry come out and make the case from the Obama administration for some sort of strike on Syria, saying that it matters, and it matters for the U.S. reputation, and it matters because of the treaties that have been signed about chemical attacks, and it matters for the same reasons we just heard, that it sends the wrong message that chemical weapons are okay. And you disagree that a strike is needed for those reasons.
Well, that's right. I think it's even worse if we do this punitive strike with no threat, strategic threat to the United States. We launch a few cruise missiles. We feel pretty good about it, but not enough killing power to do any serious damage to the regime. And then they resume their conventional atrocities against their own people using bombs and rockets and artillery. And then, as Mr. Engel suggested just a minute ago, and then we do nothing beyond that. And it's the silence after the attack, which ultimately will most hurt American credibility in the world rather than doing nothing, in my opinion.
Well, Chris Harmer, we are waiting here for President Obama, reportedly going to make his own statement to the American people in just a few minutes. What is your thinking going into that statement about a possible missile strike, strategic missile strike in Syria, and what you need to hear from him?
Yeah, I think what we need to hear from the president here is leadership. He's got to lay out the plan himself to the American people, or not so much the plan, as what are the strategic priorities here? What is American strategic interest? And what objectives are we reaching by conducting a cruise missile strike against the Syrian Air Force or against other Syrian military targets? I have to agree wholeheartedly with General Scales here. A pinprick or a statement strike really doesn't do anything fundamentally to change the balance of power or change the narrative or arc of this conflict. And if that's the case, then why are we doing it? I get it that the president may have been painted into a corner here. Maybe those statements about red lines were injudicious, I'm not sure, but the point is we shouldn't be committing forces unless we have a strategic interest with specific strategic objectives. I think we do have a strategic interest here. I do think we have strategic objectives. I would favor a far more significant strike and far more significant involvement if the president were to make that case. I don't think that's the case he's making, though. The problem with going in on such a limited basis is there's this great middle of the Syrian people, the silent majority that are looking to us for help, the moderate rebels that don't want to ally with al-Qaeda. They certainly don't want to ally with Assad. They've been fighting against him for 2.5 years. They need someone to help them. And if nobody's going to help them, then they're going to turn to al-Qaeda for help. And we're going to see this great mass of Syrian migration over to the very radical Jabhat al-Nusra and Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, both affiliated with al-Qaeda. And that's the worst possible outcome for us. So what I want to see from the president today is a clear delineation of what our interests are, and a clear explanation to the American people why we're getting involved and what we're going to do with it.
And Chris Harmer, by the way, we might not hear that because Secretary of State John Kerry laid out quite the case that the Obama administration believes is the case for taking action, but ended by saying, so now that we believe all this, what will we do? But said, we will continue talking to the American people. We may not hear from President Obama when he speaks in the next few minutes exactly what he is considering. We did not hear it from Secretary of State John Kerry. And by the way, we should say to our stations that when the president speaks, we will cover that live.
Of course, yeah. Of course, we're going to cut to the president live. And the point is I don't need to hear from the president. Your listeners don't need to hear from the president exact specific military details. I think there's a lot of people talking about it who don't know exactly what. I'm sure that General Scales has a better idea of what this attack is shaping up than I do. I'm sure the planners in the Pentagon know exactly what the attack is shaping up to be. It's not that we need to know the details about that. We need to know the strategic implications. We need to know what the strategic interests are. That's what I want to hear from the president before we get involved in this. There are, and I'd like to echo something.
Chris, actually, I want to. We'll come back after the break, and we'll talk more about this. But we're going to go to a short break here as we wait for President Obama to speak. We're speaking with Chris Harmer, senior naval analyst at the Institute for the Study of War, and Bob Scales, retired Army Major General and former Commandant of the Army War College. We are waiting for President Obama to make some comments today on Syria and potential action against Syria, and we will go to that live when we get it. You're listening to Here and Now.
...9/11, JFK's assassination, just some of the events surrounded by conspiracy theories.
Even when a conspiracy theory isn't true, it says something true about the anxieties and the experiences of the people who believe it.
True or not, they're part of our culture, argues Jesse Walker, author of the new book, The United States of Paranoia, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
This is Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Jeremy Hobson, along with Robin Young, and we are waiting for President Obama to speak on Syria. Of course, last hour we heard from Secretary of State John Kerry laying out the case for action against Syria, potential action against Syria. Here is a clip of him speaking.
We know what the doctors and the nurses who treated them didn't report. Not a scratch. Not a shrapnel wound, not a cut, not a gunshot wound. We saw rows of dead lined up in burial shrouds, the white linen unstained by a single drop of blood. Instead of being tucked safely in their beds at home, we saw rows of children lying side by side, sprawled on a hospital floor, all of them dead from Assad's gas, and surrounded by parents and grandparents who had suffered the same fate.
Chris Harmer joins us now. He's a senior naval analyst at the Institute for the Study of War. We're also joined by Bob Scales, a retired Army Major General. And Bob, I want to go to you and ask you about the evidence that Kerry laid out. He said that the UN investigators who are there are not going to tell us who used these chemical weapons. That's not their mandate. What about that? We won't find out exactly who from the UN who used the chemical weapons, but it seems that that doesn't matter to Secretary Kerry and the administration.
No, I think Mr. Kerry has put paid to the argument about whether or not chemical weapons were used, and anyone but a fool would agree the fact that those weapons were delivered by multiple rocket launchers at a range of about 19 kilometers into a fairly small area that it's essentially a residential area in eastern Baghdad that's peopled almost exclusively with families and women and children. End of discussion. And in fact, I think that's one of the reasons why we haven't heard from Mr. Putin. Because I think even in Russia, no one really wants to be on the wrong side of history. So I think the argument over who was it done and who did it is over. I think the big argument now, which seems to be swirling around this town, is, okay, so what you going to do about it, not only in the short term, but in the long term, and that's where the question marks are.
Well, there is another question. If I could jump in, we are waiting for President Obama. As soon as he comes, we will go to him live. But since we have both of you, General Scales, former Commandant of the Army War College, and Chris Harmer of the Institute for the Study of War, the other question is, why was it done? President Assad has the upper hand in Syria. There were weapons inspectors there. Why was it done, Chris?
I think there's two elements to that. The first is it was militarily necessary, in his opinion. Assad has been able to gain localized supremacy, but only in specific areas where he masses his force. He does not have enough mass and depth to control the entire country. I think what we see in the flow of the war, especially over the past years, wherever he chooses to fight in mass, he can win, but he can't hold that territory. The rebels have been holding on to these suburbs of eastern Damascus for quite a while. And as horrific as it sounds, and I want to make sure your listeners understand, I review this in antiseptic terms as an analyst. I am fully aware of the horror of use of chemical weapons. It's a very effective weapon for area denial. And so the Assad regime put these chemical weapons into those suburbs, knowing that they would have a significant impact in dislodging rebels or enabling the future offensive of the regime. The second aspect of that, in my opinion, was psychological. I think Assad chose this date specifically. It's the one-year anniversary of when President Obama laid out this red line. The UN weapons inspectors were in town, and I think he's sending a message to the rebels. He's saying, nobody's going to help you. I can do whatever I want to you. You have no defense against me. You've got nobody who's going to come and help you. Pitch it in right now, give up and get out, because I'm going to win this thing by any means necessary.
Well, Chris, just to jump in, because I want to ask General Scales that. That is the point that Prime Minister Cameron and in some ways Secretary of State Kerry made today, that there's some feeling of there is not going to be a response. There have been 14 other smaller chemical weapons attacks in Syria, and that is one of the primary reasons that the administration and its backers are making for an attack now, that Assad regime is literally thumbing its nose. General Scales, yep.
Oh,
yeah.
That's right. Let's just go over his pattern of behavior. What Assad's forces do is they form an initial strike, which is fairly small. Then they back out and listen for the public response from the world. And if it's muted or if it doesn't exist, then they follow it with an overwhelming strike. They advance into an area, they hold the terrain, and then they continue this progression. That's what he did with Scud missiles. That's what he did with large-scale rockets. That's what he's done with mortars and artillery. It's a pattern of behavior that's consistent. But I will say this. I'm sure they're sitting around the Minister of Defense in Damascus as we speak, saying to each other, wow, we're not going to do that anymore. And they're not going to do it, in my opinion, again, for two reasons. Number one, it's not worth a reward as far as the Syrians are concerned. And secondly, I believe that they can achieve their objectives by killing their fellow countrymen with conventional weapons. And so if the administration wants to have an effect, I believe they probably had it already, but the Syrians are brutal, cynical, killers with nothing to lose, and units like the Syrian 4th Armored Division and his rocket artillery groups are perfectly capable of committing the grossest atrocities and sleeping well at night.
And just to remind people who are just tuning in, we're waiting for President Obama to speak on Syria. We did hear from Secretary of State John Kerry in the last hour. He said, the question is no longer what do we know? The question is what are we going to do about it? Let's hear a little bit more of what Secretary Kerry said.
We know that the Assad regime has the largest chemical weapons program in the entire Middle East. We know that the regime has used those weapons multiple times this year and has used them on a smaller scale, but still it has used them against its own people, including not very far from where last Wednesday's attack happened.
Chris Harmer, he also said history is full of leaders who have warned against inaction, indifference, and silence when it mattered most. Is that compelling for you? Is that a compelling argument?
I think it's a compelling political argument. As a strategic analyst, I try to be as dispassionate as I can in analyzing what is happening. For me, the American strategic interest here is pretty significant. The last thing that we want to see is Syria become a failed state. Right now, we've got significant areas of Syria that are safe havens for both al-Qaeda on one side and Hezbollah on the other, with the acknowledgement, of course, that the al-Qaeda affiliates in Syria are better known as Jabhat al-Nusra and the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham. But whether they are al-Qaeda core or simply al-Qaeda affiliates or sympathizers, these are fundamentalist terrorist groups on the one side, and Hezbollah, of course, is the biggest foreign terrorist organization in the world. So when I look at this, I see America's strategic interest in preventing a failed state where the two biggest foreign terrorist organizations in the world have significant safe havens where they can operate with impunity in planning their next strikes against America and American interests around the world. I completely acknowledge that most of your listeners right now probably regard U.S. military inaction, U.S. military action in Syria as a bad option. But
well, most Americans do right now.
I'm sure. Yes, I've seen the polling, and I get it that there's a big pushback against this. What I would say to your listeners, in all sincerity, is there are bad options, there are worse options, and there are horrible options. If we agree that intervening in Syria is a bad option, I hope we have the intellectual integrity to understand or acknowledge that allowing chemical weapons to be dispersed amongst Hezbollah and al-Qaeda is a far worse option than U.S. intervention now. I'm not saying that I can guarantee that U.S. intervention now will prevent that. What I am saying is that the arc of this war right now is leading inexorably to that conclusion of a failed state in Syria with a massive safe haven for the two biggest foreign terrorist organizations in the world, where they can set up training camps, they can set up distribution networks, all the stuff they did in Afghanistan, all the stuff they've been doing in Somalia. It's getting closer to us and to our core interests in the Middle East and across Europe. I think the case can be made from a strategic perspective that what is called for here.
Well, Chris Harmer, what I'd like you to do, and I'm going to ask you to do it briefly just because we're, again, waiting to hear the president. But again, you're at the Institute for the Study of War. You said a few minutes ago that some are considering these very limited strikes, maybe against artillery or places where the weapons were based that launched these chemical attacks. You said you'd like to have a heavier attack. Could you just briefly outline what does that look like for you?
The first target I would take down is his Air Force. The Assad Air Force is one of the best weapons he has to use against civilians. He's been using the Air Force to considerable effect in what we would call area bombing. He isn't good enough with his Air Force to pick out individual targets, so what he does is when a neighborhood starts supporting with the rebels, or tolerating their presence, rather than pick out individual military targets amongst the rebels, he just bombs the entire neighborhood to rubble using his Air Force. So the first thing I would do is I would take down his Air Force with a cruise missile strike. It's possible. It's doable. This is not the Iraqi Air Force of 1991. These guys are nowhere near that. They suffered through 30 months of attrition. That can be done. And doing that would have an immediate benefit of preventing further civilian casualties. A follow-on benefit of that is, for a variety of technical reasons we don't have time to go into now, aircraft are the best, most effective way to disperse chemical weapons. That's the way Saddam Hussein dispersed chemical weapons against the Kurds back in 1988. The second thing I would do is take down his integrated air defense system so that any further aviation actions by America or NATO or the West could be done fairly easily. And the last thing I would do is increase significantly the aid to the moderate factions of the rebel army. There are still moderate rebels out there who are hanging on, trying to resist the advances of al-Qaeda, trying to establish a moderate secular Syria. If we don't help them, if they have no other option, they will ultimately default to al-Qaeda because they hate Assad more than they hate al-Qaeda. But if we don't intervene on their behalf, they'll have nowhere else to go but al-Qaeda.
Chris Harmer, chilling, senior naval analyst at the Institute for the Study of War, making the case for a larger strike against Syria. We are also speaking with retired Army Major General Bob Scales, who says no military action against Syria, but all of this has political consequences, Jeremy.
It does. And just to remind people who are just tuning in, this is Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Jeremy Hobson along with Robin Young, and we've got some guests with us, including Rick Klein, who's joining us now, political director for ABC News. Rick, what do you make of what's going on today? And I should say, you know, we're waiting to hear from the president. It may not be a long statement. It's a photo op that he's doing with some Baltic leaders that he's meeting with. But we are waiting to hear from him on Syria following these remarks from Secretary of State Kerry. Rick Klein, your thoughts.
Well, we just heard from a pool reporter in the room who says that the president says in that statement that he hasn't made a decision on Syria yet, but he calls it, quote, this kind of offense is a challenge to the world. So, again, just bringing the rhetoric up a little bit, this stage is so much about building public support for the mission that he's about to engage in. That's the sense, is that he probably has made a decision in his head. He just hasn't pulled the trigger yet. And what this right now is working to make sure that he's got as much public support and congressional support as possible. The military is ready to go on his orders. We know that UN inspectors are due to leave tomorrow, and then it would seem that a window opens up for him to act.
And just to be clear, so people understand, this was not carried live. The comments that you're talking about may have already happened. They did already happen, but they have not been broadcast yet. We haven't heard them yet, and we'll bring them to you as soon as we get them, but we haven't heard them yet.
That's exactly right, and this is just to underscore the case that Secretary Kerry made earlier today, and now the president is going to hone in on it as much as possible, and very clearly trying to put out as much evidence as possible, because they realize the political predicament they find themselves in. The public is not on board, the Congress is not on board, the international community is not on board, and this president, particularly this president, doesn't want to be acting by himself.
Tell us more about that, Rick Klein. What's going on behind the scenes here? Is there a chance that Congress, which is on recess till September 9th, that's a long ways away, that Congress will be called back? I mean, that gives him less of a sense of being out there alone. But then again, it may be more voices raised against his plan. So what's going on?
That's right. Well, the British Parliament just showed you the dangers of a legislative branch getting involved in this just yesterday and turning back that plan. But what's happening now is that there is fierce opposition and even anger in some quarters in Congress on both the left and the right. But interestingly, the leadership of both the Democratic and the Republican Party are not inclined to make a major issue out of this. There's no big interest on Speaker Boehner's point or Majority Leader Reid's point in the Senate to try to call Congress back. And without that, we've got another week and a half of a break that gives the president a 10-day window to act basically as he wishes. Assuming that these whatever operations we engage in are wrapped up before then he's able to tamp down some of the political pressure that would engage in Congress. I'm not clear if there was a vote on the floor of the House right now at this hour that the president would win that vote. The president would get endorsement from Congress, because he hasn't really made that case yet, at least not in the minds of many members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans. So there is a bit of a political equation here in terms of the timing, that this is actually, with Congress dispersed across the country, not a bad time to try to get something done.
And as you say, Rick Klein, no decision yet on Syria is the headline, it looks like, coming out of the White House. I should also say, Robin, I'm monitoring Twitter here, mm-hmm. and the front page of the International Herald Tribune for tomorrow, which is the New York Times version that goes all around the world, the top story, Syria braces for U.S. strikes.
Yeah, and we've been hearing reports out of Damascus that Syrians there are crowding the stores, buying bread, canned goods. There's anticipation there, and also that President Assad has been moving troops and armament into residential areas. But Chris Harmer, again, of the Institute for the Study of War, weigh in on what Rick just said, that there might be a 10-day window here for President Obama to deal with some of these issues we just mentioned. General Scales was telling us that, boy, that's enough time for everybody to get out of town in Syria. Tell us from an analyst point of view what that means, the longer time goes on.
Yeah, well, the world burns while we fiddle with our thumbs here. I mean, there's I'm not sure what else the president is waiting for. He's got everybody in his own government saying there is conclusive evidence that this was Syrian government-initiated activity. The strategic situation hasn't changed that much over the last, you know, year or so, other than this use of chemical weapons. If there is a case to be made for going to war, the president has to stand up and lead that case. And let me rephrase that. If there's a case to be made for a strike...
Right. Well, it's interesting you made that slip, because people feel that one leads to the other. The strike will lead to war.
That's a very valid consideration, and that's why I, as an analyst, say, look, half measures will be the death of us all. If this is worth going to a strike over, it's worth engaging significantly in. Now, I want to be clear that I'm drawing the line at, I don't see the need for U.S. boots on the ground, because the Free Syrian Army moderates have told us consistently, and all the evidence says that they are accurate in this, that they have more than enough people willing to do the fighting and the dying and the killing and the actual combat if we will just support them with lethal aid. These are rebels that are not motivated by a fundamentalist interpretation of their religion. They are actively pushing back against the al-Qaeda influence. But the longer we wait to intervene on their behalf, the more difficult it becomes for them to withstand that pressure.
Well,
Rick Klein, I want to just bring you back in for 1 second and ask if there Congress is not doesn't look like Congress is going to be making any vote on military action. But if they did, would it pass?
Right now, at this hour, I really have doubts about that. I don't think it would pass the House of Representatives. I don't think that there's an interest in putting that to a test either, and that's why you're not seeing Congress rush back to town. So really the best thing that Congress can do and congressional leaders can do for President Obama right now is stay home for a little while and hope that that he's able to build public support, maybe complete whatever mission he has in mind. He does say it's a limited mission that he's considering, not a boots-on-the-ground approach. Hope that it's done before they come back, because there is not appetite in this country, in this Congress right now, for military action against Syria.
Well, again, Todd Gilliman, Dallas Morning News, is tweeting out that President Obama has told the poolers in the press that we are not considering any open-ended commitment. We're not considering any boots-on-the-ground approach. He's speaking with members of the press, and we will have that sound for you momentarily, but we're going to take a quick break. We've been speaking with Rick Klein, always great to hear Rick from ABC News, Chris Harmer, senior naval analyst at the Institute for the Study of War, Bob Scales, retired Army Major General, former Commandant of the U.S. Army War College, as we follow this pretty extraordinary day as Washington and the Obama administration try to make their case for an attack on Syria. We'll take a break. Be back in a minute. Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.